9:28 now, talking to Dr. Judy Hoag, licensed clinical psychologist, host of the Savvy Psychologist podcast, our longtime friend. How you doing, Dr. Judy?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How are you?
I'm well. We're going to talk about parents and smartphones, although we're really talking about phones and mental health here for the most part, aren't we?
Of course. Everyone's favorite topic.
Tell me about how they can negatively impact kids.
Well, the thing is that phones are just so high stimuli and things are happening so fast and people can scroll and switch in between content really fast and also simultaneously look at a bunch of content at the same time. And what we know about developing brains especially is that it will oftentimes impede the proper development of our executive functions and our attention stores. So even as adults, you know, we may feel sometimes overwhelmed by all of that. And as children, because the brains are still under construction, it has a bigger impact that could end up carrying into other things that they need to do throughout the day, the tasks that they need to complete, and also just contributes to a sense of feeling overwhelmed, rushed, like there's just too much going on at the same time.
And even phone is a misnomer because it's really like carrying a little computer around with you. That's what we're talking about.
Exactly. I know. It's so complicated. I still remember when we had, you know, rotary phones in the home.
No,
really,
you
phone
don't.
Phone, right?
You might remember push button.
Do.
You don't remember rotary phones.
I had a rotary phone when I was very
little
growing up in Taiwan.
No
oh, yes.
Kidding.
There's a picture of me with it when I was like 4 years old.
So it's not all bad. It can be good, right?
Of course. I mean, phones, you know, again, like you just said, phones are a little computer. So there's a lot that we can accomplish with our phones. But I think a lot of people are not necessarily using their phones for productivity. And even sometimes the productivity apps on a phone can get kind of overwhelming. Like there's just too many things happening.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, phones help us keep in touch. Phones help us to stay on top of the news and any updates. All those things are great. But I also have people complaining that they feel like they're too connected. Like sometimes they really just want to be away from their phones, but people always know how to reach them even when they're on a vacation. You know, and this applies to kids too, right? I mean, maybe they are trying to just, you know, have a nice day with the family. But they keep checking Instagram or TikTok to see what they're missing because they know that their friends are out today and they're worried that their friends are doing something super fun without them. And that contributes to anxiety and that feeling of FOMO that a lot of people complain about.
And as far as super fun, I'd put that in quotation marks because, you know, 12 seconds might look like super fun, but that's just 12 seconds out of God knows how much, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that is, unfortunately, you know, you fill in the blanks, right? You see the 12 seconds on a reel or on a TikTok video, but you fill in the blanks of, oh my gosh, you know, and when the camera's not on, they're saying this or doing that, and I'm missing all of it.
It's just like a TV program is what it is, and I don't think kids realize that. Is there something parents can do or should do? Like, at what's age appropriate for a child to sit down and say, look, now, here's the deal. What you're watching is not real. In a way it is, but in a way it's not. And at some point they have to have a reality check, right? It seems like earlier would be better than later.
Oh, definitely. But I think that it can be tough, right? Because sometimes when you have that talk with your kids, they think that you're the one who's out of touch. You have no idea what they're going through. And, you know, to an extent, they're probably right. And also, once you start to talk to them in a sort of, you know, I got to talk to you, this is a lecture kind of way, they just kind of tune you out. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's, you got to find that right approach. And I think so much of it really revolves around staying curious and being curious about their habits, why they use the phone, you know, why they're interested, but not making it seem like an interrogation and seem more like a conversation where you're trying to learn about their interests, why they use the phone, why it's important to them, you know, what they think the benefits are. I think that it has to sort of bridge that feeling of I'm getting a lecture from my parents to, oh, my mom and my dad, they just really want to know about my life.
As you say that, I'm just thinking about the conversation, how it's evolved through the years with the phones. And you know, I've been watching Breaking Bad and what's the other one? Better Call Saul. And they got their old flip phones, right? And you think about how much that's changed with the iPhone. a smartphone. And then the concern used to be with predators and young people, and it still is. But now it's almost the threat is not as much a predator as much as it is just the social backlash, right? One way or the other?
Absolutely. And I think that a lot of times people are thinking about, you know, of course, those dangers, those big dangers that you just mentioned. But it's also the fact that with our phones, we're constantly feeling connected to anything that might be going on, any potential gossip, people bullying you in the comments, you know, making snide remarks, making you feel bad about yourself. And sometimes they're even sending things more in a direct message. Or if you're using Snapchat, whatever mean thing they said about you, it goes away after a period of time and you can't even track it. And so I think that all of that adds up to a lot of pressure and could have really significant mental health consequences, especially for our young people, because at a certain age, we care about peer influence and we care about peer interactions much more so than we do as adults. And that's that time when all these comments matter so much more.
You have a soon-to-be five-year-old, right?
My child is four and a half.
Soon to be five.
He already is feeling some. Yeah, he's about to be five. Exactly.
Soon to be
so,
five.
You know, he's already feels. Yeah, he's going to be five in November. So yeah. he already has feelings of social pressure and influence.
Like, really?
You know, well, why can't so and so play with me longer? Well, we're at a play date, but he's spending more time with the other kid. You know, things like that. That's already happening at his age.
How do you go about introducing the whole thing with a child to a phone? Is there any data that shows there's an age that's appropriate or not, or does it depend on the child?
I think it really depends on the child. And I was actually having this conversation, interestingly, with my child's optometrist last week. And, you know, she has a toddler and she's like, well, any parent who can not give their kid any screen time, kudos to them, because I don't know how that's possible. That's probably pretty hard to do. She's like, but more importantly, if you're trying to protect their eyes, and she's talking obviously about their eye health, she's like, well, you just want to keep things at a certain distance, you know, make sure that they're not looking at it too closely. And of course, like, take breaks. I think that every family is going to have their idea about this, because there are health and mental health effects of having too much screen time too young. But I also think that when parents judge other parents for having their child use screen time, you know, that's not very helpful, because I think that most people need it just to get a break. Like, if you want to wash the dishes or clean up before bedtime, you know, you need to have, you know, YouTube babysitter maybe for like 20 minutes while you're doing all of that. And so I think you have to watch your child. And if your child is showing signs of distress when you try to take away the phone, the YouTube, they're protesting too much, they're starting to act out of sorts, you know, that kind of shows you that they're having some kind of an addiction to it. And it doesn't mean that it's clinical addiction. I'm not trying to diagnose your three-year-old child, but it's more like, wow, if they're having this big of a reaction when you try to take away their phone and they're not like, you know, okay, I don't really want to, but I'll do it, then I think that you're starting to see a problem develop. And that's when you really have to be more strict about enforcing limits and explaining to your child in a way that they can understand their age. Like, it's not great for you to watch, you know, the phone for this long. Let's play something else. Let's do something else. And really making sure that there's variety in their activities.
Somebody texted in, I was talking about Breaking Bad, and they said that smartphones are the electronic crystal meth. We're going to talk about the addictive nature of these things when we come back. Dr. Judy Ho is our friend, our guest, licensed clinical psychologist, host of the Savvy Psychologist podcast. Text me at 504-260-1870. If you got kids in school, tell me how you handle their phone usage, how you monitor it, and do you check their phones? Because, again, back in the day, it used to be, let's check to see what you're looking at, predators, keystroke programs, etc. But now it seems as though the conversation has shifted from that to bullying and your friends trashing you on social media, or the thing of thinking everybody's life is better than yours because you're seeing this little 12-second snippet that in no way is real life. 504-260-1870 if you want to get involved. 937 23 till 10. Traffic now, WWL. 944 16 till 10. Talking to our friend Dr. Judy Ho, licensed clinical psychologist, host of the Savvy Psychologist podcast, about smartphones and parents and kids. And Dr. Judy, somebody texted in and said they want to go through their kid's phone to see what they're up to, talking about a 15-year-old girl here, but the kid being the 15-year-old girl. But they don't know what to look for. And that's a good point, because I mentioned back in the day it used to be, you know, predators or maybe Chris Hansen and looking for some old guy trying to pick him up or something like that. But now there's a lot more threats than that, right?
Yeah, definitely. And it can be really tough because there's a new app coming out all the time, and it's just impossible for you to always be fully informed on everything that's going on. But, you know, there are some websites for parents to know about kids' apps, basically. And I don't know that they're always going to be 100% ahead of the game, but there's several different websites that essentially educate parents about the kind of apps that are out there. There's also some parental control apps to manage screen time and how they access things. But, you know, I think the most important thing is if your child is living under your roof, then there has to be certain rules. Like, I can check your phone anytime I want, and I need to have passwords to all of your apps. And I think that that's a reasonable thing to ask, because it's your money, it's your house, right? They're living with your rules. And if they want to have a phone, then as a balance to that privilege, you need to be able to have access to anything that you want to look at. So if you of course, it doesn't prevent them from trying to delete an app before you go and look at it. But still, if you're looking at their phone and you're trying to get into an app and you can't open it, you know, you can request that they put their password in so you can look at it. And I think that that's very reasonable. I don't think that that's overbearing, because I think that you need to have parental monitoring. I think you and I have talked about this before, Tommy, but parental monitoring is one of the biggest predictors of good functioning in children and adolescents. You know, just the fact that you're on top of what they're doing and you're asking questions.
Somebody texted in about the addictive part of it, the difference between habit and addiction, and is there anything that indicates, and I know you and I have had this conversation before, but with dopamine and so forth, there is an addictive nature to whatever it is that social media is feeding you through the phone, right?
Yes, definitely. And it's because the quickness of how you get emotional and sensory rewards from using phone and apps and how they're designed, they are a bit unnatural in a way, right? It's not giving your dopamine sort of the type of spike that it would regularly have if it was just exposed to, you know, a really fun activity, a great meal, a great laugh with your friends. Like, there's dopamine spikes there too, but they don't spike it so quickly. And, you know, I think some researchers, which I think they're trying to make a point, it sounds very severe, but what they're saying is the level of dopamine spikes in terms of how significant they are, they're starting to replicate in some ways what alcohol and substances do when we use them. And so this is the part of the addictive nature, or like gambling, for example, or internet gaming, like all of these activities that have shown to have addictive qualities. It's because they spike the dopamine in such a large magnitude that your brain then starts to become addicted to that, right? It is not satisfied anymore the next time you just have a great laugh with your friends or go out for a nice meal. It wants that bigger dopamine kick. And then your brain starts to get more and more used to that. So your brain builds tolerance and it needs to be bigger and better the next time. And so, and the apps are always trying to make them bigger and better because they want your attention. And so, you know, we're not making app makers out to be like horrible human beings. I mean, obviously there's great apps out there too, but they are trying to tap into that particular, you know, human drive of wanting to feel good. And dopamine is a feel good as well as a motivational chemical. So it motivates you to do that same behavior next time to get that same high, if you will.
Somebody texted in and wants to know the best way to go about their kid getting some negative feedback from friends on social media.
Yeah, it's really hard, right? Because I think that's going to happen to everybody who uses social media at any point. And I think it's really important to normalize the behavior, but not discount it. So, you know, yes, you know, this is not, you're not the only person this is happening to, but not like this is no big deal, right? So you're not the only person that this is happening to, you know, but we know you're suffering. And what can we do to help you with that? You know, is it better that you just kind of take a break and don't look at it for a little while? Is it that maybe you need to reevaluate who are your real friends if they're saying this about you? Or do you want to actually have a direct talk about whoever's spreading this rumor if you have that relationship with them? I think it's important to help them problem solve it, but without actually doing it for them. And the answer might not be just, you know, well, this is why we don't use social media. I mean, that's not really a great lesson. I think that that's also unrealistic for most people. They're going to use social media. And so it's more about, like, how can we use it in a way that's more responsible? And if these people are toxic, if these people are making you feel this way, then do you want to be friends with them? You know, like, do you want to rethink your friendship, maybe hang out with another group of people who might not say this about you behind your back or to your face on social media? And I think that that will help at least start the conversation.
Well, they are family, so no, I'm kidding. When it comes to the age thing and kids, somebody texted in, basically what they're asking is it possible to raise a child today without a smartphone? Because they're going to be kind of like left out of the loop, right?
Yeah, but I also know that there's a lot of people who don't give their teens smartphones, and they're just used to that as a way of life. And it, you know, you can give them a phone for emergencies, right? They should be able to contact you when they need you, but they don't need a smartphone for that, right? And so I think that you might feel like your child is missing out. They may tell you that they're missing out, but I also know many parents who are successfully raising their teens, and their teens don't have phones, and they're doing really well. And so I think it's really about your own parenting philosophy and also maybe reevaluating your own anxiety about it. Like, do you think that you're not going to, you know, be on top of everything if they don't have a phone? Or is it that, you know, you don't want them to miss out, but it's your anxiety that's overriding the fact that there are kids living without phones? So I would say talk to parents who have done it both ways. You know, if you need a little bit more advice or just guidance on what works, talk to some parents who don't give their kids phones and see how they manage and how their kids are doing.
I want to do a quick poll here at 504-260-1870. If y'all know of any teenagers that don't have a phone, because I don't. Do you, Dr. Judy?
I do, yeah.
You do, really?
Yeah, I can think of literally five families off of the top
really?
Of my head right now.
Teenagers kids, with
I mean,
no phones?
Their child. Yep, and they're like 14, 15 years old. Their kids are between the ages of 13 to 15, and they don't have phones. They don't have smartphones.
Everybody's doing fine?
They just borrow their parents' phones to do things. Yeah, they'll like use their parents' phone to text their friends. You know, they'll play games on their parents' phone. I've just seen them do that.
Somebody else texted in. They said, what's the best way to handle being involved in a negative chat? Do you call the other people out or do you just not take part in it?
Yeah, I mean,
I guess they're talking about where five people are on a chat. Yeah. Trash and yeah. The sixth person that's not there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if it was me, I would say something, but not to shame people. I would just say, hey, like, I'm, you know, well, like, you know, I'd rather not talk about that. Or like, that's pretty mean, guys. I mean, I wouldn't make a big deal out of it, but I would kind of call them out at least to say, I don't like this behavior and I'm not going to participate in it. But I also think that it's totally fair if you want to really confront them about it, and maybe not even on the chat, maybe the next time you see them, that's another way to have that conversation. Because otherwise people get defensive, right? Especially in a group environment. And then the other thing is, if it feels better, just ignore it and not be part of it. Don't be part of that chat. When they're talking that way, that's okay too. I think that's defensible. But if you have a feeling about it and you don't want to be part of that, there's different ways so that you don't have to be complicit in that behavior. And, you know, it's a little bit like groupthink. One person will say something mean, the other person says it, and the ha-ha, everybody's laughing about it, and then people just kind of keep going. And I think that that is how gossip starts, and that is how you hurt people, because eventually the person you're talking about finds out about it.
Is there a rule of thumb when it comes to time, or is that all individual?
I think it's individual, but you need to also realize that so much of it is about variety. So sometimes people will say, well, but my kids finished their homework, so I just let them play video games for 4 hours. I mean, there's 4 hours of free time. If there's 4 hours of free time, not all of it needs to be video games, right? It could be 1 hour video games and 3 hours of other things. And so the biggest thing is about variety, to stimulate your brain in different ways other than with this kind of unnatural way that's very stimulating and very fun, but also, you know, you need to be able to walk away from that. So I don't know if you know this about you, Tommy, but I really love video games. But mm-hmm. thankfully, I tend to like the video games where you can dip in and out of them, like the old school, like Street Fighter or Tekken games, like things that you kind of play naturally for 15, 20 minutes, and it's easy to step out of it. Mm-hmm. But obviously, right now, there's so many games that are so involved, and apps are like this too. In the app game, you can play an app game for 6 hours. And so setting a timer is a good way to do it when you're a parent and just say, you got 30 minutes of phone time, go ahead, you know, and just kind of making that a routine. I think that that can be really helpful. And then having other activities around so that they can choose other things to do, and giving them a couple of options.
If you don't want them to do it, don't do it yourself.
Yeah, you're still modeling it for them, right? So if you're saying, hey, you can't use the phone for 4 hours, but you are, you're using the phone for 4 hours and it's not for work, then I think you need to evaluate where you can really set your own limits so that your child can follow you, follow your example.
Are these behaviors any different than they used to be, or just magnified because of social media?
I think that there's an actual difference, because there just wasn't access to this kind of thing before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I was a teenager, we started using dial-up modems to get online. That was a huge breakthrough. But before then, we weren't at our computers that much, you know? I mean, we played like Oregon Trail. Do you remember that? That was a game on the computer.
You had to actually work.
But it's such a slow,
if you want to trash somebody.
Game.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's too much work. So it's a completely qualitatively different thing that we're dealing with now.
Thank you, Dr. Judy. I appreciate it. As always, Dr. Judy Ho, licensed clinical psychologist, host of the Savvy Psychologist podcast, 956. We'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.